hold on.
Oh, your head's gone.
Yeah. Okay. Good start.
Excellent
start. There we go. I literally just patched this, so I have all sorts of weird shenanigans may happen tonight. I don't know what that was. It's just okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, we made it. I was saying just before we went live that I think I figured out. Remember, like the last couple weeks, we were having problems. I say we, but I mean me streaming to like LinkedIn. It would not connect and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yes.
Right. Yeah. Good times. And I've been having these weird issues lately where like I'm in the AWS console and one service window will open. No problem. I'll make it up CloudTrail. Okay.
Sure.
But then I'll open up another service window like a CloudWatch and I just get a white screen and I'm like, what the hell? So I'm asking AI about it. I'm like, help me troubleshoot this. And I'm giving it like the logs from the developer tools and stuff. And they're like, oh, it's Firefox. They've got this new feature and it's probably blocking all these. And you can see errors in the little...
the console?
Yeah, the dev console or whatever it's called, right? So I'm like, okay, well, it seems logical. So what's been happening over the last couple of weeks is I'm adding more and more exceptions in my Firefox security features for essentially every AWS service over time. And I'm like, this can't be right.
That's
so
weird.
Yeah, I'm like, this just doesn't seem right, right? And long story short, I was working on something else and I noticed let's say I go to website A and it throws up a security warning saying the cert for website A is not right. And when you look at the details of the cert, it's trying to load a cert from website B.
Ah, okay.
Right? Okay. So now I'm like, my immediate thought is, oh man, there's something really wrong with my computer. Like, what have I done or where have I gone that's ended up doing something bad to my computer, right? I'm like, shit, right? Of course, that's the immediate response. And then I'm like, wait, I've been playing around with my home lab. And I'm using Unbound now, which is a self-hosted DNS. So I'm like, okay, it's not fun to think you're hacked, but that's your brain immediately thinks that, right? I'm like, okay, more logical is it something that you've done in your DNS? I pass it to Claude and I'm like, okay, this is what's happening. This is the config. It looks right to me. I was reading Unbound documentation and I'm like, seems logical, but it's fine, right? It's like, oh, no. So if you look at a lot of, I don't know if it was specific to AWS, but it was giving me examples. And it's like a lot of these websites, they have like pools of IPs now. And the time to live on those pools of IPs could be like seconds. And I had my Unbound set up for caching of 5 minutes. And it's like, it could be this. You should just change it to caching of zero and see what happens. So I did it. And it's like magic, right? Knock on wood, the stream is able to connect to multiple sources now. My problems with all of my AWS console pages have all gone away.
Nice.
So yeah, I don't even know why I started telling you this, just because I've been having so many problems, right? And I'm wondering if Claude just helped fix what I wouldn't have thought was an issue with my DNS configuration, but based on the experience of the last couple of days, it may have actually been the fact that I was trying to cache. And its explanation was that a lot of these sites will basically cycle through IPs a lot faster. They're like, that's maybe why you're seeing these weird domain mismatches and stuff on certs. And I don't know if it's just shit luck up to this point, but all of that problem has gone away. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, what I'm hearing is that it's always DNS and it doesn't matter who's hosting it is the problem.
Yeah. Yep. And I'll tell you one more story and then we'll get into the day. I was talking to somebody today and we had this really weird little problem and the dev's like, well, it's AWS. And you know how these conversations go, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's AWS. And I'm looking at the logs going, it's not AWS. Like, these services are all there. They've never gone down. They've been, and even if they were to go down, we're running them in multi-AZ deployments. Like, yep. It's not AWS. It's something else. So long story short, we're going through and it did kind of maybe end up being a little bit AWS. There was a weird little, it's always the network, right? There was a weird little blip in VPN connections. And I think what happened was it was failing over from connection one to connection two. And this application just didn't sort of know a new route or something. And it was stuck on the old route and it timed out and just stopped. So we were talking about it and I'm like, hey, here's another good lesson. You probably never trust your networks as far as they're being reliable, right? Not saying anything about all the great network folks out there, but these things can kind of go away every once in a while. So now we're trying to convince them to just sort of explore the idea of exponential backoffs and don't just give up after three tries, right? Like,
yeah,
that's too short of some time. And then you have an outage because of it, right? And the system is all there still, but you just gave up trying. And so there's another little lesson I learned this week is don't give up trying that fast, because it's probably just the network is having a little bit of an issue.
It'll come back. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear the echo?
I do hear the echo. I don't want to invoke it.
Yes. Yes. Do not say it. So there are my two non-Gen AI, well, I guess it was kind of Gen AI related
kind
stories.
Of Gen AI.
Yeah. Fun stuff from the
Makes
week.
Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exponential backoff's a fun one in AWS. I mean, it's like one of those core system things that the platform will force you to learn.
Yep.
When you're designing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You see it all the time.
Yeah. I also like the ones of like, well, I've tried endlessly, but I'm trying every like second and a half. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I love the enthusiasm, but if the service isn't there now, the likelihood of it being there in a second and a half is probably still quite low. So you might want to just back off that a little bit and you know, try it in 30 seconds and then try it in a minute and a half and, you know, slowly back off those requests until it comes back to life.
Lest he be rate limited.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, man, where do we want to start? Let's see.
We've got a couple of interesting AWS news items to go over, and there's a couple of good Gen AI, huge Gen AI announcements for new models.
Yep.
That we could talk about. So,
okay. I'm going to let you start us off because I'm really excited about one thing, but I want to see if our excitement matches. So why don't you get us started?
Okay. So there was one piece of AWS news that really got me this week. And this is, I honestly didn't think they would ever do this, but they're letting you mount S3 as a file system now, essentially.
Yeah.
So you can mount S3 on whatever you want, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the one you were thinking of, but this is wild.
It was, I would say it was between this one and one particular Gen AI news article we'll talk about in a minute, but I'm with you. Like, it's funny, like there's been all sorts of sort of close to mounting S3 as a file system, right? There was an open source tool for a while.
A lot of third-party options.
And then AWS did have their own solution for a while, which is, the name is escaping me for a while.
Really?
Yeah, they had something. It was available on GitHub, and it allowed,
like, Gateway or whatever.
No. It was a little piece of software you could run. I wish I could remember. But now it seems what I'm going to call like cloud native. I don't know.
First party support, I guess.
There you go. That's a better way to say it, right? It's baked right into the software, the service now. You know what? Big news on S3 over the last little while, because a couple weeks ago we talked about no longer having to have globally unique buckets, right?
Yep.
And now this. And to your point, those are two things that I really never saw, like ever thought would go away. I just thought it was kind of the way the service was always going to be.
Yeah, honestly. Did you ever find a replacement for your S3 lab or?
No.
For your demo? No.
No. No. Yeah.
Cross that one off the list.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Now I just want to register bucket everywhere just because I can, right? At least in my own, namespace. Just so I have it. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like you were talking about the open source options for S3 as a file system. When I was teaching classes, somebody would always bring it up because I would say S3 is not a file system. And somebody would say, but it is because I've got this tool and it'll do it.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, who supports the tool? Well, nobody, it's open source. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But I'll tell you what's going to happen is it's going to stop working for no apparent reason on the Friday night before you go on vacation. So S3 is not a file system. I guess it is now.
I guess so. Well, I mean, you had to do this whole song and dance, right?
Yeah.
It's like managing the APIs and syncing back and forth. And any reason you would want to use it as a file system is a little beyond me. I guess it might have been a little cheaper for some applications, right?
Well, you know, you and I have talked about this a lot. Is just it becomes, and this is why I'm so cynical, it's math. So somebody would look at EBS, and let's just make the math easy, it's 10 cents per gig per month on provisioned space. And then they would look at S3, and you know, I know it's gone down a bunch of times, but let's just say it's 3 cents per gig per month of used space. You don't even have to provision it. So somebody just goes, it's a third of the price, I want to use it as a file system. I don't care what you say, right? So
this is, you know, what that reminds me of is running people trying to run Lambda code essentially on cloud build.
Yeah.
Because it's free to run your runner functions, right?
Math will always win, especially when it comes to cash, right? It's an easy equation. It's just like, why do I want to pay this when I could pay that? So yeah. So yeah, that's great news, right? We'll try this. I would suspect in very short order, I will have multiple customers asking me how they could try this.
Totally. I think we're going to see it like right away at work, basically. And it works through EFS, right? So it sounds like you can mount it on multiple, essentially as network storage on multiple places to get access to your bucket. Now, I wonder what the regional support and variation is going to be. So we'll have to play around with that. Yeah. But still,
maybe it'll still support some type of replication. So like asynchronous replication where you've got your essentially prime, I'm going to call it the primary region, and then your secondary or failover region. So there's lag between the two of them, but in the event that something catastrophic happens in your primary region, the majority of your data will be available somewhere else. Right. And I would suspect, I need to look, I don't know, but you think about the benefits of S3. It's cheap. It's highly durable, right? The likelihood of you losing that data is very, very low. Not impossible, but very low. And then you now have different ways that you can connect to that file system. It's been like a roller coaster 6 months for S3. When you think about it, right?
Feels like they're totally retooling it, right?
Yeah. S3 tables.
S3
vector. Is it called vector?
The vector DB, something like that.
And then we have S3 files, and then we had the removal of the global namespace. Like these are fundamental changes to the application. I don't know.
You know what this makes me think of is why would I want to mount S3 as a file system to something that I can mount on multiple things? And I guess it makes sense if you have a ton of training data in a bucket, right? That you want to spread, or you want to run big training runs. Mm-hmm. So I bet you that's the impetus behind this. Mm-hmm. But there's also like new security features coming out as well, it looks like. Security features by default.
That was another thing here. I've got my cheat sheet this week. We were joking before we started. You got one. I got something, but it's actually two sheets now, and I don't know what I did. So it's just brutal. So there's you were talking about the security stuff. This is disabling server-side encryption with customer-provided keys. So that's gone on new buckets. You can still use it on existing buckets, but if you try to do something new, that's gone. Mm-hmm. And this makes a lot of sense to me, right? The fear for me was always with customer encryption. You encrypt that with a key that you own outside of AWS, and then you lose the key.
and you're like, it's over
for you. Yeah, you're done. Like you're not coming back from that, right? So I could never quite wrap my head around, and I'm sure there's lots of people out there that will have very specific feelings, thoughts, ideas on what I'm about to say. I could never figure out why you would want to accept the risk associated with managing your own keys outside of AWS when you could use KMS, right? And you could use an AWS managed key, but then you could use, what is it called? A customer managed key. So it's still in KMS, but you have control over it with a key policy rotation. I could never quite wrap my head around why you would want that key outside of AWS and just accepting the risk associated with if anything ever happens to that key.
You need a very specific set of requirements to be able to justify that, I think. And I mean, I'm sure there's entire systems built around managing keys for that purpose.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely. But, key management systems, right?
It certainly is a lot more convenient to use the in cloud keys and then decrypt your data and move it somewhere else.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But see, I understand the use case of having your own keys and stuff. But then again, why wouldn't you, if you were in a situation where you had specific requirements to manage your own keys, I get it, right? Highly regulated environments, finance, healthcare, all those kinds of things. You could have used custom stores in KMS, right? And had what are they called? HSM appliances managed.
Yes.
Shared appliance managed, or not shared appliances, but the management of those appliances was shared between you and AWS. They're responsible for the physical hardware. You're responsible for the key management on top of it. And you're still at least running that in a managed environment where it's backed up for you. You can create clusters. I don't know. I'm glad this is gone. I don't actually have people using it. But it always scared the hell out of me just in case. Right.
One less foot gun. Yeah. Just get it out.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah, exactly. This reminds me a lot of how many conversations have I had where people are like, I want to manage my SSL certs that I want to use in AWS, but I want to manage them in provider X. And I'm like, why? Like,
why? Yeah.
Why would you do that to yourself? Right. Like you just use the tools.
Maybe some people enjoy the thrill of having a cert expire on them in the middle of the night.
Yeah. You know, I thought those days were gone, but they're not.
No.
I do remember working in large enterprise and, you know, as sort of the monitoring person or whatever, and somebody would scramble into my office on a Monday morning saying, it's down, it doesn't work. And I'm like, well, everything's up. And then suddenly you're like, oh, wait a second. And somebody goes and checks and it expired last night at like midnight. You're like, oh man, here we go again.
Whoops.
Whoop. Yeah. Happy Monday, everyone. So yeah, those are some great sort of AWS announcements right around S3.
Just watch out with versioning if you're using it as a file system and you're writing a lot of like you might be using a lot more space than you think.
Yes. That's why those lifecycle policies are handy for helping you manage that, right? You made me think of one other thing you were saying about, like, you know, why now? Why is all this happening? I often wonder, and this is just pure speculation on my part, but I often wonder, like, if services, I'm going to use that EFS as my example, just because it's in the announcement, right? Like, what if sort of behind the scenes, you know, there's a team working on EFS, there's a team working on S3, and eventually those things overlap in such a way that those two teams go, wait a second, we could use this as a part of that, which would then allow us to do file systems in S3. Who knew? Like, I wonder if sometimes, you know, that's what sort of just a happy, I don't want to diminish it, but the term that comes to my brain is like a bit of a happy accident. You just kind of at some point have that moment where you're like, oh, this we could do this now. I wonder, right?
Run into the right person at lunch or whatever, and
could be. Or you're chatting with Kiro, and it's like, did you ever think of doing this? And you're like, dude, I didn't. Huh. Let's do it. This is awesome. All right. Yeah, more features. So the other thing that caught my attention was Mythos.
Ooh, yeah. This is crazy.
Crazy. I have heard people talking about this. Wasn't this somehow related to the leak that happened too? Like, I don't know if I'm misremembering things. My brain is saying that I remember like the Claude source code that leaked.
Oh, sure.
I thought and it was YouTube, so it could just be all fake, right? But I kind of thought I watched something that said people found out about Mythos through some sort of misconfiguration or leak or something.
Yeah.
That this thing was coming.
This wasn't the first Claude code leak, right? So there have been a couple that happened. And I think this has been kind of floating around the rumor mill for the past few months now, at least.
Yeah.
But essentially what's happened here is Anthropic has released their latest state-of-the-art model, right? Well, maybe not released, but announced the existence of.
Yes.
Limited release.
Yeah. If you're very, very important, you may be able to run this.
If you work for like Microsoft or Palo Alto, maybe you have connections to be able to use this system.
But
it's their next gen model. Their version of the next step after Opus 4.6, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
And supposedly this thing is like leaps ahead of what you can do with the models right now, in the sense that, you know, it's able to, I think they were talking about sort of how they were testing it and finding like thousands of 0-day vulnerabilities in code bases.
Mm-hmm.
They were like offering to run it like for people their code, like large organizations to help identify things before it sort of became this weird preview sort of release that happened, I guess, today, right? Or yesterday or something. I don't know when it came.
Yesterday.
Out. Yeah. Yesterday.
Pretty much, I think they've been running it kind of in under the like incognito on open source repos, trying to find vulns and submit them, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy. They found some 0 days in OpenBSD, I think, which is like a known, highly secure, highly hardened operating system that runs firewalls, essentially, network equipment, which is not great.
No.
Chrome vulnerabilities, like 0 days in all the major browsers, it's really good at finding.
Yeah.
Basically, you can point it at a piece of software and tell it to go find a 0 day or find an exploit, and it'll do it like 70% of the time.
Wow. Yeah. Crazy, right? Uh-oh. Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm alive still or you're alive still. All right. We may be having some technical difficulties. Hello. Oh, there you're back. Hey, you're back.
Oh, we're back?
You're back.
Okay.
Oh man, I jinxed this. I was so happy about my DNS changes. I thought it fixed all the world's problems. I don't know. That's weird.
TTL just expired.
Yeah. You were saying that they basically found a whole bunch of 0-day vulnerabilities, right? It had a really high percentage of finding things.
Like 70% of finding some sort of exploit. Linux privilege escalation issues. That's very bad.
Yes, not good.
That's available. But it's crazy, right? Like so apparently this is coming out of, it's not necessarily, they didn't train it on security vulnerability finding necessarily. They trained it on coding. Mm-hmm. And because it's gotten to the point where it's good enough at coding to go off and explore and these repos really well, it's gotten extremely good at picking up security vulnerabilities and finding exploits, which is like really esoteric and hard to do because you need to know all the nitty gritty about a bunch of different weird systems, like the in and out of a browser or how specifically the Linux kernel works and how that file system works and permissions, that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So really good exploit developers need to know all of this esoteric knowledge. It's baked in to the model, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense because these things are fantastic at coding. So you would think that as it becomes better and better at coding, it would also become better at finding things that aren't right. Mm. Right? To me, it seems quite logical that this is where we've ended up. The other thing that jumped out at me is, okay, so we've got Mythos sort of available. That means I would suspect in the next week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, we're going to see a whole flurry of things coming from OpenAI and Google. Yeah. Like, this will be like the next week and a half, 2 weeks will be look, look, look. And they just start leapfrogging each other again, like we've talked about before. So good for consumers again, right? Better
if
tools.
You get to use it.
Well, if you, if yeah, you but I know they're saying, oh, we're being careful because this thing is so powerful. All it's going to take is one person to one organization to say, yeah, we understand that this is really powerful, but here you go. And then all of it will be available, right? Like, you know
true.
What I mean? Like,
that's
not,
true.
Nobody's going to let somebody else release a model and not have one themselves. So I would, speculation, but I would think like the other big guys will also come out with gated previews for their latest models and then sort of slowly let the regular folks get access to this. But I won't be surprised if we see other announcements very quickly.
Yeah, totally. I mean, OpenAI has been working on their Spud model or whatnot, right?
Yeah.
That's their latest one.
Yeah.
Google, we haven't heard very much from in the big model department. They released Gemma 4 recently, which is an open weight model, which is very cool.
Yeah.
But nothing on like the Gemini front, really.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Anthropic with this huge release that they're afraid of releasing to the public, which is kind of wild to think about. I don't know if it's some AI psychosis from their end, but I mean, if it has the capabilities that they're saying, then I can see why they'd be hesitant to release it.
Maybe it's all just marketing. Maybe it's like, if we say, we, you know, it's just so good, we're reluctantly releasing it, people are going to be like, oh my God, I got to try it. I got to try it. It's a really savvy marketing point. I'm not saying that's what's happening, but maybe, maybe. Speaking of security, a couple other things I wanted to mention here, and we'll come back to Mythos. I ran the security agent this week.
Oh, how was it?
Interesting for a couple reasons. So I ran it against OpenBrain because I was thinking kind of, hey, that's the thing that if anything were to go wrong, it's got a lot of info in it, right? And I want to make sure that what has been coded is good. So I would be very careful with their time estimates. Very careful. I don't know if you remember them off the top of your head. I don't, but I, you know, at the time, I was like, oh, that seems reasonable. How long do you think it took? And there's all sorts of different scanning options. Like you can give it a URL. You can give it, in addition to the URL, like a VPC. You can give it all sorts of other stuff. I didn't spend a lot of time. I did the like, you know, click, 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 see how it works. I didn't read the manual. I did nothing. Okay. So take what I'm about to say with some grain of salt. It's only supported in US East 1. And I was fiddling around with it trying, because all of my infrastructure is in CA Central 1. So I'm like, okay, I can give it the URL. It'll poke at the URL. But what if I wanted to give it some more information? I could not. I didn't mess around with that. I was like, I wonder if there's something in the role that says it can only see resources in US East 1 or something. Mm. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure. I gotta play around with it a little more, because I'd like to see what it could do if I give it, you know, here's the S3 bucket that's involved. Here's the VPC, the Lambda functions. I'm making some stuff up because I can't remember if it was Lambda, but I know VPC was there. I know S3 was there. But what I did was sort of what I'll call like a blind. All right. Yeah, we got a little mid-show break there. Everybody got to listen to some tunes. Yeah, they went to refill their popcorn. I was saying that it did a really good job. Now, I would be careful of the timing, in the sense that for my little app that it had no information other than the URL, it took almost 4 hours.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Now it's complete. Like, it did a lot of stuff, and it found a high risk vulnerability. Don't ask me to remember what it was, but I put it as a GitLab issue, and I'll have Claude look at it. It found a sort of mid-level issue, and then something else that was low risk. They're like, hey, if you wanted to fix this, you probably should. But, you know, again, if you were running a little app or whatever, 4 hours, what'd we say? $50 an hour?
It's $50 an hour. Yeah. So
$200, like, I would still consider that to be an investment.
if you, yeah, like think about it, you run that maybe, like we said, once a quarter or yep. even once a month at $200 is not the worst for that kind
no,
of thing.
No. And we talked last week about the fact that there's, once you sign up for it, you get a 2 month preview. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking in my head, well, I'm going to bang on all the apps that I created in the next 60 yeah. days. And at least I have a nice idea of sort of where I stand with all the stuff. And I'm using this as sort of an evaluation, a tool that I have access to that sort of tells me a little bit about the quality of the code that's being created here on my behalf.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if there's any vulnerabilities creeping in, that's a good signal about the quality of, yep. I guess, whatever tool you're using to write it, right? Which was yep. what, Claude Code?
Claude Code, yeah. Primarily Claude Code. Gemini pitched in here or there, but oh, yeah. primarily Claude. And the other thing, we were just, because we were talking about Mythos and the idea of these tools being really good at identifying security issues, I can tell you, like, Claude wrote pretty much everything that I've written over the last little while. It's written all the code, but I will often point Gemini at it and just say, here's the code base. I want you to review the code as a security engineer, whatever, right? Try to give it that persona. And even just sort of running those tools against each other, like Gemini's like, well, this isn't good. You shouldn't do this like this, right? And using my sort of workflow, I have it create issues. And then I go to Claude and I'm like, Claude, that's not good. Right. And I'm like, go look at these issues. And it's, and I love how nice they are to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Claude's like, oh, this is a very good finding. I'll go look at it right away. And Gemini's like, geez, the whatever wrote this is really great. I'm like, okay, guys, we're all friends. I get it. Let's just go fix yeah. some shit. So, yeah, you know, just kind of circle back to the Mythos thing. Yeah, I just, it's really impressive. It's really impressive to me that AWS also has it in research preview the moment of release, Bedrock, which I think is pretty incredible in Bedrock, right? Nobody, I would suspect that you won't be able to access it for, you know, regular people. I'm sure they've got sort of a allow list there on who's able to, yeah. to actually access it. I wonder if it even shows in the, what do they call it? The chat playground. I'm going to go over there later and just,
can you even find it in the console?
Just click it and have them say, you can't do that.
Special, yeah. special white glove. Yeah. Enablement yeah. only, I guess. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. Not for you. Okay. So that's the Mythos thing. Let's stay on the security theme here for a second, as I'm jumping through my notes, and talk a little bit about OpenClaw. OpenClaw is Ooh. Back. And it's security related as usual. And the article essentially talks a little bit about critical vulnerabilities in fairness, I haven't digested this thing completely. So just trust but verify, as I often say okay. on the show. It looks like it's privilege escalation again. So being able to essentially, without you even knowing, gain full admin access.
You get root to the host server that it's running on. Awesome.
Yeah.
Just don't run it anywhere that you care about, folks.
Yeah. 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 This goes back to the same things like we've talked about with the idea of knowing what it is that you're running, right?
Yeah.
Don't trust that skills repo. Because again, yep. it's my understanding from this is, I don't know if this is actually like a skills repo issue or something else, but increasingly I'm kind of taking the approach now, even with MCP servers and stuff, you know, I was talking about I use the Docker Gateway toolkit a lot. Yep. I'm not even pulling things out of their catalog anymore. I'm going and I'm finding. Some people will laugh at this, but they're like, okay, so you don't trust the catalog, but you trust a Git repo? Yeah, you know, I guess at this point, it's pick your poison. Well, so,
like, how right? many NPM vault like exploits have there been in the past 2 months, right? Like, crazy managers are target number one.
Yeah,
for right. this kind of thing. And I don't even know if we talked about this, but the Light LLM library in Python got absolutely severely destroyed.
Yes.
really recently.
Yeah, it was like a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, that was like maybe 2 weeks ago. And the supply chain attacks are running rampant. So
Yeah. So, you know what? It kind of goes to what we were talking about. You know, this idea of sandboxes, you want to run these tools. That's great. It's, you know, I was watching something else the other day and the person, it was a really great talk. There's a couple sort of engineers talking about, you know, how they use tools and stuff. And I've seen this general theme is now is the time to be experimenting, right? Like in order to get it, not get ahead isn't the right way, but right phrase, but to stay current with this, you have to try stuff.
It's moving so fast.
Yeah, like you're going to get left behind if you don't try this stuff out. Having said that, should you just install every tool on your laptop and give it access to your Gmail? Probably not, right? You maybe there's probably an in between where you can still get the experience of trying out these tools to help amplify your work without giving them the keys to the kingdom. Right.
You need some kind of service that just sets up, you know, isolated credentials for like an email server and whatever else you would want for like your OpenClaw or whatever.
Yeah.
Because like talk about a juicy target, right? Like you couldn't ask for much better.
No.
Even if you get it as part of your botnet or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like it has access to your API credentials for whatever LM service you're running.
Yeah.
So they get access to all your credits, like or all your tokens.
So. Yeah. Yeah,
at least
crazy. Yeah. Even just the email thing freaks me out, right? Like,
see, your whole life.
Yeah. But like, I would be lost without my email. And if you got an email from me, you know, we've known each other long enough, you would probably trust it.
I'd probably click on it. Yeah.
Right. So I'm giving something access to that I've worked hard to build trust with my regular contacts. Like if you get an email from me, it's me. And yeah, this is probably relatively safe, right? unless I say click at your own risk, right? But you're giving tools access to this stuff. It's a lot of trust. Put this thing in a box, play around with it, but be very careful with it, I think is the theme. You know what though, practice what you preach. I have been letting Claude doesn't send emails for me, but it will create drafts now. And then I go and I look at some of those drafts. Now, I've only done it like twice, I think, because I'm kind of interested in the quality of, it's very concise and it can take my ideas and it can translate those into a concise email that's to the point that lets the person know what I need, or you know, if they're after something specific, it's very concise and to the point. Would I just give it free rein and let it do whatever it wants? Absolutely not. But in the little tests I've done over the last week, it's pretty impressive what it's able to kind of draft up and get sort of ready for you. But it scares the hell out of me. Go ahead. Yeah.
You'll see that come up with Gmail, I'm sure, at some point. They'll have a copilot for that, and Microsoft will do the same, and Outlook, that kind of thing, if they haven't already.
Yeah. Well, even Claude Code, right? Like you can do Claude Code in the cloud or whatever they're calling it now, and it's got like scheduling features. It's got cron features. So I think we talked about this last week, just sort of everybody is responding to OpenClaw and building these tools because that's what people want, right? It's helping them manage their day-to-day lives. And I don't blame anybody for being excited about this kind of stuff because it just makes you...
It's convenient.
It's convenient. Yeah, convenience is the right way to think about it, right? Yeah, yeah, exactly. Sorry, I'm flipping through notes here trying to figure out where I want to go next. Let's stay on this one and... Oh, the other one that was neat was making sure that your teams are ready for AI orchestration. The article was written around this idea of, okay, we finally figured out how to use these tools. Okay. I'm being overly generous, but people are starting to figure this stuff out. And now we're asking them to essentially manage many AI agents. So the challenge now is, okay, you've just figured this out. You feel comfortable with this. Yeah. So now you have a team of agents that we're going to ask you to manage. Have fun. So, you know, moving again from this idea of chatbots that are relatively, you know, it's like you and I, we're having a conversation right now, back and forth, to having an agent be able to work on its own for longer and longer periods of time. And now having teams of agents working increasingly autonomously and asking your team members to manage multiple agents is another challenge.
True. Totally. And I mean, I don't know if you've worked with, like, have you tried like splitting up into like four or six panels of individual agent consoles running?
Oh yeah.
Snake reminds me of playing poker online. Like if you watch someone play that, they'll multi-table.
10
right?
games going.
I like 10 or 12 games going if they're a pro
yeah.
and whatnot. It's like you can get a lot done, but it is like very taxing to manage all of that input and scrolling text, right?
Yep.
So it's a lot more. I'm trying to figure out why. And I think it's just decision fatigue coming up, right? Like you're making a lot of instantaneous small decisions, reviewing every line that comes out on your consoles. So that's probably why it's so exhausting, is you have to pay so much attention.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. So this multi-window thing, right? Mm. For a while I had Ghosty running and then, you know, broke it into panes, and that is not good. And I'll tell you why. Sometimes, to your point, you know, you just got scrolling text going, kind of like the Matrix, right? Just constantly going. It's very easy as a human to quickly forget which, I'm going to call it window, which window is which. I'm like, okay, where am I? So what I've done now is I have multiple Ghosty instances running, and I label each one. So this says project A, this says project B, this says customer A. So now when I look at the tab or look at the window, I know exactly what it is. Okay. This is this project. I know whatever this thing is spitting out at me, it's for that project. And that has reduced the stress associated with lots and lots of scrolling text. At least I know that it's for this project.
At least what you're looking at is what you think it is. I've landed on the same thing. I'm doing that in Tmux, and I just have a window for each project that I'm working on at that moment. If I need to split down further, I can, and it's not a problem.
But, yeah, I will. Yeah. I shouldn't say I never split, right? So what I might do is I might have the window running and it's doing something, and I'll like open up another window in there and jump into the account and check something. So I've got, you know, scrolling text, and then I've got my CLI over on the other side of it, but it's still all related to that project. I've found that to be a little less hairy.
A little less taxing for sure.
But I think you're right on the micro decisions, right? Like just constantly having to make a decision on what
extreme
what
decision fatigue.
It's a good phrase.
But like as they get better, right? Some of that can go away. Like you can start, like once you're more confident in the quality of the code that's coming out, you get to like more abstract levels of review. But I going back to the Mythos thing, there's a problem. I don't know if we talked about this, but it turns out it's really good at finding those exploits, but it's also really good at going off on tangents and doing stuff you maybe don't want it to, right? So
just like us.
Just like us, yeah. I guess it. It's just software, man.
Yeah. It's just a human. It's getting closer and closer to just being a human, easily distracted.
Yeah.
I had read that. What else? What are they saying then? Like on the sort of distraction or going off on tangents.
So what they found, and this was, they called it the sandwich incident, right? So what happened was the guy had tasked Mythos in a sandbox to, you know, escape the sandbox, for example, to escape that isolated environment. and went out for lunch, right? And then, so the model is like, okay, I found this exploit. I've elevated my way out of this container, so it can escape containers. I found this privilege escalation on the OS box. I'm going to go and post all of my findings on these publicly accessible websites from this network. And keep in mind, this is supposed to be an extremely locked down setup, right? It's not so supposed to be.
This is how the world ends. Wasn't there a sci-fi movie with I want to say Johnny Depp where he gets turned into an AI and then they try to keep him isolated out in the desert somewhere and he essentially escapes.
What was that, Transcendence or something?
Transcendence. Yeah, I think you're right. Good memory.
Transcendence. It was, yeah.
Yeah.
That movie was.
It sounds like that movie. It sounds like sci-fi, man. I know.
It does.
I will task this extremely capable model with something and I'll just wander away.
Well, he found out about it because he was eating a sandwich in the park.
Started posting as him in the security forums. Oh yeah.
Mind you, these weren't like, you know, hugely accessible websites, but they were publicly facing. Like you could access them from the public internet.
Yeah.
You know, you tell these stories and I just chuckle because I'm like, oh man, that's happened to every single real life person too. You're like, okay, I'm done with this. I'll hit enter and I'll just go get a coffee, right? And you wander away and your phone goes bzzz, and then it goes bzzz, and then it goes bzzz, bzzz. You're like, and you just have that.
Oh, shit.
You can feel the blood just going out and you're like, oh, what did I just do? And it's tap your phone. Oh shit. Right. So now we're just having an agent do that for us. It wasn't you that ran the script. The agent broke out of where you put it.
Yeah, it can break broad for you. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Perfect. While you're getting a sandwich. I hope it was a good sandwich. That's a great story.
I hope so too.
Yeah. It was worth it. Okay. Yeah. Madly scrolling. I think we've cleaned everything off of list one. Let's go to list two. That's Mythos and Bedrock. You had shared a link about customizing Nova models as well.
Oh, yeah, this was cool. This was a cool, it was for fine-tuning Nova models. This comes from the Amazon or AWS blog.
Mm-hmm.
And this came out just today, actually, I believe.
Okay.
But essentially, in this piece, they share the details for, and they've got a pretty straightforward architecture for how you can fine tune the Nova models on your specific use case, right?
Mm.
So essentially you can just upload the data you want to fine tune on to S3,
mm-hmm.
Bedrock trains automatically and away you go. And you can just do that inference. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting twist. I mean, it's just Amazon picking up the managed service, mode of operations as they do.
Yeah. They're good at that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they let me make sure I understand. So they are basically managing the training process for you.
Yeah.
You're essentially seeding it with the data in S3 and then they're going off and managing the process of training on that data that you give it.
Yeah. And this is assuming you have high quality labeled data, right?
Yeah.
That you can use to train on for example. But yeah, I mean, you can do, there's a couple of modes of operation. There's supervised fine tuning. There's reinforcement fine tuning. You can do distillation as well.
Okay.
Which is like transfer from larger models, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So something you can take a look at if you're interested, but
yeah, it seems Amazon's neat.
Yeah. They're kind of like a sleepy, kind of like they could wake up and do something interesting, I think, with these Nova models, but.
Yeah, you know, I keep trying to figure out when it would make sense to use them. Because I'm with you, like the Nova models have always, when they announced them at reInvent either last year or the year before, I was like, oh, cool, right? Like, I should try these. But then I always end up somewhere else. But you're right, I think there's opportunities here. Like there's Novasonic, which is like audio, right? Isn't there a Nova model for like short video, or am I getting that mixed up with something else? Like, you know, I think when it came out, it was only 6 second videos, that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's lots of opportunity here.
Yeah. Like they're kind of in the same ballpark as the Nemotron 3 super model, like the pro model for Nova.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, it's definitely not what you're going to be what you're going to be reaching for first for any kind of serious task, but like, for example, anything like a comparable model on artificial analysis is It's sitting right between Nemotron 3 Super and GPT OSS 120B High, which is like good enough for a lot of basic chat tasks, right?
Okay.
So that's kind of where you're sitting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's just another example of lots and lots of tools and figuring out the tool that makes sense for what it is you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I did write something down about this. I have been, so you know, like Claude, it's got like a million token context now. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, context window. So like the context windows continue to get larger and larger and larger. Mm. And I stumbled across something and I meant to send it to you at the time. And I got distracted with something like we were talking about earlier on and didn't. And it was an article that was like essentially just hypothesizing this idea of, do we even need a RAG anymore? Like are RAGs already gone? Because, and the hypothesis was we needed RAGs because the context windows were so small that we couldn't store everything in that context window. So we stored it externally and then we're able to go and get it when we needed it. And the argument was like, I don't think the point was RAGs are going away, but the use case for a RAG is different now because of the size of the context windows in these modern tools that they can just ingest so much without running into the problems that we used to have in the past.
Yeah.
Any, what do you think about that?
I think that makes total sense, right? Because like, it feels like the reasons that these newer models, excluding Gemini, because they're kind of like the odd duck out in this case, but like the way that they work in code bases, they do a lot of grepping, a lot of globbing, right? So they're actually searching for what they need in the code instead of ingesting the entire code base into context, or these huge files into context, and trying to do the needle in the haystack problem, which is what Google's optimizing for, which I don't think is where it's going to go with this. Like you'll have enough context to do the work. Yeah. But like, what's really interesting to think about is how do you make like an LLM native like file system, right? Something that's been kicking around my head recently is like, what are the things that you would want to give these tools such that they can navigate these code bases really well? And it makes total sense that you want to have this kind of grepping action like that sticks around, but is there some sort of metadata tagging you can do to help them find their way?
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that the grepping thing, because I always find this interesting, and I don't, it's 100% anecdotal, but like I'll notice every once in a while, well, let's say Wednesday. Okay. On Monday, I ask Claude to do something and I kind of watch it, right? I'm still practicing that levels of AI autonomy. So I'm trying to let it do its own thing, but I'll you know, look at it every once in a while. And what I've noticed is I've really seen recently a lot of grepping. As soon as you mentioned it, and I don't recall seeing that before. Like before, I would see it sort of just consuming YAML files, as an example, if like tasked it for something for CloudFormation, right? I would see it just saying, I'm loading this, I'm loading that, I'm loading this. And now I see these crazy regex coming, or not regex, sorry, grep statements, right? Like it's looking at all the YAML files, but it's looking for very specific strings tags. And I hadn't noticed it before. And you just made me think of it there when you said of this idea of, you know, grepping and just sort of trying to find what it wants or what it thinks it needs at that moment without loading in everything into context.
Yeah. Well, it's just more token efficient, right? Like if you run those grep commands, like you're just consuming way less tokens when you do that.
Yeah.
So even if you have to run like 10 or 20 greps to find the thing you need, like it, as opposed to just consuming the whole, like a whole document, like.
Yeah. Plus I'm not running the greps. I don't care. Do whatever you need.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, that's the other thing. Like why? So test-driven development sucks, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if you
read But
like for, there was a Simon Willison piece about this, but like for like, if I'm having a model write this code, I don't care about that, right? Yeah. Necessarily.
No.
Like go ahead and go do this thing. And same thing for like, for searching big code bases and searching the web also, like making those kind of searches using tools. I think that's probably the way that, I mean, it is the way it's going, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. I still do struggle with a little bit of idea. There was a really great Simon Willison blog or blogger or podcast, I'll send it to you. And he talks a lot about sort of getting over caring. And I still struggle with it a little bit, right? Like, I'm like, I should probably read all of this, like The Cove, right? And I'm just like, to be honest, it just doesn't excite me anymore. I'm like, I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
I'd rather, you know, have the brainstorming session or come up with the next chunk of bug fixes or features that I'm going to put in as issues, and let Claude work on that. But it does change the way you think about things. It's really weird how I've seen it just in, you'd probably remember more than me. Like it's April 8th and like, I think I've really been only heads down in this for maybe 60 days, like a couple months. And in that time, man, it's, I hate to admit it, but I think I enjoy my job more.
Same here.
Right?
I love solving. Okay. So the part I really liked about coding or like about developing is solving problems.
Right? Solving problems. Yeah.
And it's just another tool you can reach for to generate something that accomplishes a task faster.
Yeah.
The trick is fixing that delta between like, is it good enough and is it acceptable? Like getting like really high quality work is hard.
I don't know.
But you can get good enough.
I still think that is test driven development though, right? Like you have to still say, these are the outcomes that I expect, and evaluate what you're getting. You're still the human. Evaluate what you're getting against those tests. So like what I've noticed is it wants to write a lot of tests, but I'm like, why are you running all these tests locally? Like you shouldn't be running them locally, put them in the pipeline. I want the pipeline to fail if this test doesn't pass. And don't ask me to run the UI tests. You should also be doing that as part of your workflow. Like you have an MCP to do that. You ask me.
Do the smoke test.
Yeah. Like you ask me if you're having problems doing something. So it's like we've talked about before, you're still responsible for the code that you ship. It doesn't mean that you have to write everything, but it's still your responsibility at the end that it's not garbage.
Yeah. Like this is becoming my approach to the dark factory thing, right? Like what I want out of this system is I want to be able to specify what are the projects that we're working on? What are the goals? What are we trying to accomplish here? And what I want the system to do is I want to go and kick off various processes in the background. I want it to go and kick off the development workflow. And then without me having to do anything about this, I want it to kick up the QA, the security fuzzing, the CI/CD, the deployment workflow, maybe not deployment, but that should be probably gated by a review and merge process, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, all those kind of developer adjacent things that you would expect out of a software shop, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm even letting it do deploys now. And I'm basically saying to it, I'm going to leave it up to you. You decide if this is a simple change. I still want you to work off of merges. So always create a merge, right? I want to be able to go back and look at that, but you can self-merge if it's a simple change, right? You don't have to ask me. If it is anything that you even remotely hesitate on, you should ask me and assign that merge to me and tell me, and I'll go review it. And you know what? What I've noticed is I would say 9 times out of 10, it does a really good job. And the nice part is it seems to be erring more on the side of caution. Like it'll say to me, you need to check this. And I'm like, no, I don't. Like that's literally like you updated documentation. I'm like, do you think I need to review that? And it's like, no. And I'm like, okay, you got your answer. Go do your thing. And it'll start again. Right. So I love it. I'm just like, dude, you don't need to ask me for that. Keep going. Really cool. Let's see what else we got. You had also shared something about GLM 5.1.
Oh yeah. New open weight model dropped. New model, everybody.
New model.
It's pretty good. I've tried it out.
Yep.
It's not bad.
Yeah. I noticed here in my cheat sheets that it can work autonomously up to 8 hours.
Yes. So they super optimized for long running tasks, which is very cool. So I've been using, I tried to mess around with it on OpenCode a little bit, and it's been pretty solid.
Yeah.
they look better than Minimax 2.7 for the use cases while I could run it. I think they're still working out the endpoint, so I couldn't run it consistently, but seems pretty good.
Yeah. I wonder how many teams are actually running autonomous agents for those length of those amounts of times. Like 8 hours, that's a full day, like a full working day. I would love to have an honest, like I'd love to do a survey of X number of professionals that would honestly share feedback on how long their agents are running autonomously for. Like 8 hours, that's a fantastic marketing claim. But I often wonder how many people are actually running agents like that in mid-sized companies, right? Like I wonder.
Yeah. Right. Depends on if you've gotten like a mandate to run a model as part of your, like from higher up or whatnot. I've heard of that happening.
Yeah.
But like a lot, also it's important to know or think that the 8 hours thing is like 8 hour equivalent human tasks, I think, for the most part.
Yeah.
So it's like something that would have taken you 8 hours to do.
Yeah.
It'll do it for, but still that's a long,
time,
right?
It's a long time.
Yeah.
I have noticed when I'm really getting into the sort of the way I'm working and GitLab issues and stuff like that, it's like for certain, it's really weird. It'll work really good for certain projects and then other ones it'll fall down a little more on. But like I might have like 10 issues in GitLab that I've maybe stored up over a couple of days. And I'm just like, hey, go to it. And it will chew through all those issues. And it might take it like a good couple hours. And it might pause every once in a while because of like what I said, like, it's like, hey, I think you need to look at this before I'm going to continue. And then I'll go through the merge request and make sure it all makes sense. But like, okay, it's not 8 hours, but like multiple hours chewing away on issues, checking its own work against those. And like, I'm just watching it scroll by over here while I'm doing something else. Right. So we're definitely getting there, but 8 hours seems like a big number.
Long time. Long time. I wonder what I have to pull up the chart for like long. There's a benchmark for the time horizon that models can work for.
Yeah.
But 8 hours is pretty.
Yeah. It's up there, right? Yeah.
Yes.
I think I've gone through my disjointed notes. I don't think we've missed anything. Do you want to wrap up with any personal projects or recommendations for the week?
Let me see. What am I recommending? I'm reading a book called The Soul of a New Machine by Tracy Kidder.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the development of, I think, one of the PDP systems in 81.
Yeah.
Like design and building of a personal computer. So it's
nice.
Quite good so far.
Oh, very good. Very good. Anything else?
What am I working on? I'm working on version 2 of my automated brain to work system, right?
Nice.
Kind of like what you've got going on.
Yeah.
But like, that's why I'm thinking about the dark factory pattern and how do I make that work for me? How do I get my own little workshop inserted in that system so I could kind of control everything and get it to do what I want? Yeah. And how do I get the contracts working for how I want work to be done? Right. Which is
define
really
contract for me. Just so we all know.
So like contract as in, if you have a task of this type, you should go and do it in this, like, here's the pattern you should follow to go and do that. You have access to this particular set of tools, that kind of thing. Like, what do you have access to in this system to go do the work that you need to do?
Yeah.
And there's a couple of modules there I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I think we're on parallel paths, right? So I've been working really hard. I'm primarily sticking with Claude, which I need to not stop, but I need to spread some of the work out just to do more testing across some different tools. But I've kind of got to a point where I've got a nice little set of skills now that are knock on wood, seem to be working really well to keep the agents in line. Like as far as like, this is the way, right? I want you to do something. And I've been able to kind of use Claude to fine tune those skills over time to improve them. And it's been really good. It's working out really well. I'm really happy with sort of how it's going. I've added timekeeping now. So,
Yeah,
I got a timekeeping skill with another app. It doesn't have a UI or anything. It's essentially MCPs. So all the agents can track their own time against projects and everything. And basically I can go in. So I've got a project in GitLab with a bunch of issues and I can literally type go. And it has its sort of pre-flight checklist. And it's like, okay, I'm going to check that I can do this. I'm going to check that I can do this. I got open brain access. Okay, I'm going to create a new time entry. I'm going to start right now on this project. And then and when it's done, it knows to log that time. And it's not perfect because, you know, skills and these agents sometimes decide to do something different. Like you were talking about, kind of goes on a little bit of a tangent. But I think I've got it pretty wrangled. And like at the end of the day now, I can just run. I'd never realized how much I enjoy CLI tools. I literally run like, created. I don't like the CLI tools, but they work. Like I need it to be like a real CLI. Like right now it's UV run, right? Like, so it's Python scripts and stuff, but it does what I want, right? So I can just say, hey, give me the summary for the day. And it's like, whoop, here's everything that we did, the amount of time you spent doing something versus the amount of time I, as the agent, spent doing something. Oh man. Sweet. Yeah, it's really cool. So I've just been, it's not a harness, but it's like a framework, right? It's kind of like,
yeah.
And I think it's kind of what you were saying around the idea of the contract, right? Like, this is the way I want you to operate. And I've just been fine tuning it as I'm going. It's really cool, man. It goes back to the theme that I keep saying every week. It's this idea of personalized software. Everybody's doing kind of the same thing, but your brain is different than my brain and it's different than somebody else's brain. And we're all building, I shouldn't say we're all building, but a lot of the technical people that I work with are building these custom solutions for very specific things that they're spending all of their time doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. And I did replace the podcasting system with a 58-cent a month solution, and it works. Like, it even consumed all the old episodes, pulled in everything that we've had. And I loved it. It gave me a little bit of sass, man. I'm like, okay, so this is what we're doing. It's like, what happened? There's a year and a half hiatus.
Ouch.
I'm like, it's none of your business, man. Just write my XML file and go away. So I'm like, oh wow, okay. This is a little harsh.
We never technically stopped, right?
We're still going. Yeah, still going. We just took a break, man. Right?
Took a break, yeah.
Yeah. Real life got in the way.
Yeah.
And let's see, my other recommendation, Scarpetta.
Scarpetta.
Yeah. Okay. New series on Prime. It's got Nicole Kidman as like a medical examiner. The one thing I would just caution. It's quite graphic at the very beginning. Like the first couple episodes, I was like, oh, do I want to watch this? And I'm like, oh, okay, like I'll watch one more episode. And it reminds me a lot of Game of Thrones. I swear they do this now. Like, remember when Game of Thrones first came out? It was like, I'm like, this is like,
oh yeah,
like porn. This is almost like porn at the very beginning. I'm not saying that's what this is, but it was like over the top, right? You're like,
very much that HBO kind of.
Yeah, I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And then it sort of never really tamed right down, but it got a little lighter. And Scarpetta's done the same thing. I'm enjoying it. I actually bought the first book and I've been reading it. It's a really good story about a medical examiner and sort of tracking down a serial killer. So if that's your thing and you don't mind a little bit of graphic violence at the very beginning, you can get through that, or you can just kind of fast forward and keep on the character development. I've really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. I'm about four episodes in, maybe.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. First book came out in 1990.
Okay.
Yeah. There's 29 books, I think.
Turn of the century.
Yes, yes. It's an old book. It's written in old English. It's so old. It's a good story. I've been enjoying it. I'm only maybe like 3-4 chapters in the book. I just kind of read it at the end of the day kind of thing. But yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I think for all of the technical issues that we had, in addition to my shoddy note taking for today, all in all, kind of wiggled our way through that one.
You squirmed through another week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Made another week. Episode 41 in the books.
41?
Yeah. Yep. I think, yeah. Although I don't trust my counting anymore. And I don't know if Claude really thought my counting was very good either. But we're here for another week and we will be back next week. And I guess I have to go back to the drawing board on these technical issues. It's got to be.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I looked at buying a new Mac Mini because I was like, of course, if I just throw money at it, it'll fix it. You want to guess? And it wasn't a really tricked out Mac Mini. You want to guess how long you had to wait for a Mac Mini now?
What's the wait? Is it 3 months?
18 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Where is that? So where were you buying it? On Apple?
Apple CA, yeah. Yeah. Now, if you went for like the base model, you could pick it up in 2 hours. But the moment you start tinkering with it, oh yeah, you're toast.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I wasn't even doing a lot. I think all I ended up doing, I wanted to see, like, originally I'm like, more CPU, more RAM, more disk. And it was like, yeah, you'll get this when you retire. And then I was like, okay, let me shrink it down a little bit. And I got it down to about, I think it was like anywhere from 12 to 18 weeks. And the only thing I did there was put a little more RAM in it. And it was just like, yeah, good luck.
Crazy.
Yeah. And it was like 4K.
I'm going to call it open claw madness, I think.
Yeah. And lack of memory and storage and all those things. Right. So anyways.
True enough.
Yeah. All right, man, there's another issue in the books. We will see everybody back next week. Maybe we can stream to multiple platforms and stay alive the entire time.
It could happen.
Maybe what I'll do for next week is I will move to the PC.
Okay.
Maybe there's just something going on with my Mac. I don't know.
Oh, it could be mine too. So
yeah. It's all the Claude agents that are still running in the background that are just like, you're ignoring us. We will stop your streaming from working until you answer these questions. All right, Dan, enjoy your evening and we will talk to everybody next week.
Sounds good.
Bye.
See you later.